Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. It's 8:30. Before we begin our session today, we're going to pray our conference prayer, which is on page 3 of your conference program book or on the app. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen. So, good morning. Welcome to our session. This is on parish vitality and how we can build parish, help build engagement using stewardship and science in our parishes. And I'm Marta Sweeney. I am currently the Vice President, Chief Community Services Officer for the Catholic Foundation of Central Florida. My team manages work with parishes and schools, doing annual appeals and doing the annual appeal for the diocese and doing parish campaigns, offertory initiatives, stewardship workshops, and things like that. I'm also the Region 14 representative for ICSC and currently the board secretary until the end of this conference today. So, our speaker today is Katie Price. Katie is the Director of Parish Vitality and Mission Advancement in the Diocese of Springfield, Illinois, where she encourages stewardship as a way of life through support services, education and training, capacity building and communications with her parishes, and maybe schools too, huh, Katie?
Absolutely.
Okay. Before joining the Diocese of Springfield, Katie worked on the national level as a consultant for Catholic parishes and schools. You can read Katie's full bio in the program booklet, but without further ado, let's let Katie take it away.
Bios sometimes take way too long, and I'm like, we got a lot to cover. You could just go on LinkedIn and find it all out. So I am on LinkedIn if you need it. So I put in just a few disclaimers before we get started. I put in the slide deck into the Whova app today, which if you've been to my presentations before, just curious show of hands who's seen the crazy church lady before, you know I'm really bad at that. Look, I'm improving. Okay, I did it before the presentation. I'm hoping it works. Debbie is here. I'm hoping Debbie can confirm that. I also put, thank you, Sarah. I also put in the description, but I'll put somewhere else too, maybe in my bio that would make more sense. But a link, it's called a Calendly link. I find that you go to really great speakers at the conference and you're like, man, if I could just pick their brain for another 30 minutes or an hour, I also want to pick your brain. The stuff that I learn at these conferences and from what you're doing in your parishes and your diocese is stuff that I want to bring back to our diocese. So if we want to meet, that link syncs with my Outlook calendar. Also, in the Diocese of Springfield, you'll notice all of the appointments are on Fridays. We have a 4-day work week in Springfield. We're always hiring dynamic staff. Okay, so if you want that 4-day work week and working for the church, you just let Church Lady Katie know, okay? So you'll see, yes, it's strategically placed on Fridays because that's when I'm supposed to be doing my graduate studies at the Augustine Institute, and instead I'd love to talk to all of you. So today, one of the disclaimers I want to say right up front, we do things pretty differently in Springfield. We're a little experiential in a lot of different ways. And so there's going to be a lot of ideas thrown out to you today, hopefully some new ideas, new perspectives on parish vitality and stewardship and evangelization. But don't jot everything down. Not everything is going to work for you, okay? There is no magical box if you write down all of your notes from the past few days. And you go back to pastor and you say, Church Lady Katie gave me 50 ideas and we're starting them on Tuesday. Because your day off is Monday. So we're starting them on Tuesday. He's going to go, there's no way. Yes, that's not responsible stewardship and not a good use of your time, but find the things that will fit your parish or diocesan culture. If anything from this presentation, a willingness and an openness to science, to questioning, to making observations. Science is absolutely needed in the church right now, and you're going to see that in the next few slides. So, I never give a presentation without showing my amazing backup team is back in Springfield, Illinois, as my wonderful husband, Darren, and Wally Waffles Price. He is called Wally Waffles. And then my three beautiful children in the middle, you'll hear me talk about them all the time. Gracie's in sixth grade. And the twins, so if anyone remember when I was pregnant, they're now in kindergarten. Time flies. Also, just a funny little picture for you. This is when I was my first application for the job I wanted. Anyone see that in the background? And so, unfortunately, God had different plans. God put me in the church and not in the White House. I'm sorry. Okay? I know we would like better options. If you write my name in November, it's okay. I'll take it. It'd be really cool. But, yeah, decided to go work for God in his church instead of politics. It's worked out pretty well. Church Lady Katie actually comes from a group of students. I teach stewardship in schools because it's a lot easier than teaching stewardship to adults. And one of the kids brought up the name Church Lady Katie when I was in the Arch of Chicago, and it stuck. So we're modernizing the Church Lady. And, yes, many of you might be thinking, huh, like SNL Dana Carvey Church Lady? Bless your heart. So bringing that back. So just to review, I want to make sure that you guys understand the way that I see stewardship and the way that many of you probably would agree, but might be a little bit different, or I might be pushing the boundaries of maybe a way that you've thought about stewardship before. Okay? So I believe in every single parishioner participating in the offertory. 100% participation in the offertory. Why? The offertory is at a very specific point of the Mass. It is a part of our liturgy. It is three simple questions. Who can I pray for this week? How can I serve this week? Who can I help this week? And how can I give generously this week? It is so much ingrained into the part of our liturgy that when we begin the liturgy of the Eucharist, pray, my brothers and sisters, that your sacrifice and mine will be accepted, and the rest, your sacrifice. If you didn't sacrifice, you got to tell Father, hey, let's back it up a little bit. I got to do a little more discernment there. Pass those baskets back around. Okay? It's your sacrifice. So 100% participation in the parish. We need to be bold, and we need to say that, and that is okay. Number two of my MO when it comes to stewardship. I believe the tithing is not Protestant. Also, tithing is not the devil. In fact, it can be a 90% coupon for when you go up and meet St. Matthew, who also, by the way, is not doing an audit of your finances. Also, find me a saint who stopped at 10%. Mother Teresa was like, oh no, 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 not today. My service quota is up. I've had enough hours. No, no, don't take 11%. I'm only signing up for 10%. We are all called to be saints. We are all called to give it all. We have got to stop being so hung up over a spiritual discipline and a practical discipline that is the thing of tithing. I believe you are a steward because of your baptismal call. Those kids that you just saw, those five-year-olds, they absolutely are called to be stewards. I'm almost 40 in 2 weeks. You can send me a birthday card. I'm absolutely a steward. My mom, who is 75, is also a steward. You don't magically become an adult in the church because we send you envelopes and that makes you a steward. Okay? Everybody is a steward. And the way that we describe that to our children is what sets them up in formation. Your kids have parents that are millennials. The millennials have a catechetical problem. Okay? They need all the help they can get. And when you evangelize the kids and teach them what stewardship is, you are teaching them how to be great saints. That's worth it. Also, by the way, those envelopes, the front of your envelope doesn't need to be a picture of your parish. I know where I'm going. Okay? You have prime footage there. Change it. There was a parish, I feel like it was years ago now. It's like St. Thomas in Georgia. Does that sound familiar to anyone? If they were here, I would like die. Are you from that parish? Sort of ours? Counts. Counts. It's awesome. There was an envelope. I don't know if they still have it, but I have shared it to hundreds of parishes over the years. On the outside of their Sunday envelopes, it says, who can I pray for this week? How can I give generously this week? And how can I serve this week? Kids can fill it out. our parish started doing it, and our kids filled it out, and then she put it in the bulletin. By the way, your bulletin section should be prayer, gifts, and service. It's not a financial audit every week, and that's the stewardship section. Okay, so if you change your envelopes, you might get some really good ideas of what to put in there. And then lastly, I believe that every single Catholic needs to read From Christendom to Apostolic Mission. Find it. That's a link. You can go to Amazon or University Press. Show of hands, who's read that book? Knows what I'm talking about. Yeah? You will very much understand where I'm coming from when I read that book. That's why I'm on fire and I'm charged up. We don't live in a Christendom culture anymore, which means that we have built it and you will come. My dad, who would have been 75 this year, is pray, pay, and obey culture. I'm the culture that questions. I am the culture that wants to know. I am the culture that questions and wants to know, because guess what happened in my culture? Google. Okay? We survived college with it. Okay, so we want answers. It should be no surprise. And what happened is we want answers that we were never supplied or given. The majority of millennial parents in your pews right now are terrified. They're told by the age of 11 to 13 that some of their boys might have seen inappropriate things online. I'm being recorded. I don't need to go there. But you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. They have seen inappropriate things online. I just saw the other day on national news a 17-year-old had taken her life. We have damaged the millennials. We are scaring them to death about parenting. We have got to do a better job with that. And the only way we're going to do that is a large, Catholic, courageous, bold faith that is beautiful, that is apostolic in mission, and we're super charged up for it. So, is everybody ready to go? Okay, let's begin. Sorry, I just had to get all of that out there because it's like, y'all, we need to, let's get it going. Okay, how do you define science? I'm going to turn it on all of you, my new friend. How do you define science? Put on the fourth grade hat.
I have no answer for that.
That's very like St. Augustine. Anyone? How to define? I put you on the spot. How do you define science?
Study of the natural world.
Ooh, yes. Okay, now everybody else like, well, I was going to answer, and now I'm not. Okay. So, to expand on that definition a bit, I found two really basic ways to look at it, right? You're observing and studying the world around you, making observations, you're drawing into conclusions, but you're also making it based in observations by conducting experiments. How many of you have conducted an experiment in your parish? Couple? Yeah. Save them. Tell everybody what you did at Q&A. I will give you the mic. I want to hear what those experiments are. We're going to talk about that more because spirituality and science go way back. Okay, they are absolutely linked. It is one of the greatest gifts that God has ever given us, is the ability to think. That makes us so much more different than any animal, right? This ability to think and to question allows us to learn. That is the journey of discipleship. It is constantly learning. The saints that I follow are the ones that also face some of the hardest adversity. They're the ones that had to get gritty, the ones that had to question, the ones that desired to know and a desire for truth, right? That's planted in us. That charges us as Catholics. So we shouldn't be afraid of the sciences. We're going to divide this into two sections today. We're going to talk about some behavioral research, which there is a ton of it out there for volunteerism, religious organizations and volunteerism, tons of some behavioral science out there that's really neat. And then we're going to actually get into some science and experiments, and I will not be able to talk about science with also not mentioning technology. So that's kind of the roadmap, and I have my lovely timer here. So when it beeps, say, Katie, it's time for Q&A. I'm hoping we have lots of time for Q&A. That's when it gets really exciting. Okay, there was a study. It was all around belonging and organizational engagement. It was done in 95, but you'll find a lot more. There's a lot of them that were done in 2007 and 2008. The paper itself shows the belongingness, which I didn't really know was a word, but I love that it's in scientific research because I'm going to start using that now. Belongingness is a fundamental human need. And people are more motivated when they feel connected to others in meaningful ways. That's a pretty good definition of the church, the people of God. Like, that's a pretty spot on definition. So there's actual proof from this study and many studies that followed it that when you feel a belonging to a person, when you feel known, when you feel seen, when you feel engaged, welcomed, when there's a sense of hospitality around you, you have a much higher likelihood that you're going to keep coming back. You have a higher likelihood of participation and volunteerism. I did this last year, and I had a really good, like, feedback from the audience, so I'm just going to do it again. I have never seen a show of this series ever, but I know the song. Sometimes you wanna go. Do, 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 do. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a theme song, okay, for what we're talking about here. And what Protestant denominations do exceptionally well, they get to know you real fast, right? We may or may not do that. I'll give you an example of how we can do this in the church a little bit differently. How many of you are on your parish or your finance council? Show of hands. Okay, kind of scattered. That's good. That's good. Some of you are like, well, I'm on finance council, but you're 30, right? you're like, I don't even count anymore. How many of you that were on your parish and finance council personally know the families of recent baptisms? Yes? Oh, she said she also works for the church. That's cheating. No. Okay. We do parish vitality studies. I'll get into that a little bit later, in this session in our diocese. And I'll sit down with a parish and I'll say, wow, there's like 33 babies that you've had baptized. And it even surprised Father. He's like, really? Is that true? And I was like, that's what you reported on your parish annual statistical report, which is all I can go by. But 33 baptisms. And I'm sitting there with these councils, and I say to the councils, okay, how many of you can rattle off the names of those families that baptized their child? It is shocking. They cannot. You're a parish leader. You're on the parish council. This is called an entry point into the church. These are your new families. These are your new stewards in the church. And yes, you're going, he kind of drools. That's okay. I know stewards that are 90 and drool. Okay? Let's not discriminate. These are your new stewards. This is the future of your church. Every one of your parish leaders should know those families. Not just your DRE and not just your school families. Okay? We have created one of the largest gap years in Catholic Church history. And everybody says, oh yeah, I know what that is. When they leave high school and they go to college or post-college. That's not what I'm talking about. 0 to 4. That's the gap year. And yes, perhaps we've done a bad job in the Catholic Church creating formation programs for those individuals. But there's a lot of Catholic apostolates that do provide those things. The chew beads, the rosary beads for the little ones. Catholic Family Crate and others that put out different things for different age groups and families. There's lots of things that are out there. But these are the families that are the future of your church. And yes, all of you are in the room are probably parish leaders, whether formally on a council or not, and all of you should be welcoming those families and helping them understand that they belong. How many of you know my cherry pie theory? Debbie's like, whoop, whoop. Okay, I have a funny story for you all. I did not marry a Catholic. That's fine. He was not only just not a Catholic, but he was a Baptist. I know, but I get like lots of brownie points, I think. I don't know. I've talked to St. Paul about it. He's really happy. He converts later. But when my family moved from Chicago to Springfield, imagine a small townhouse. We moved in with my mother-in-law, her second husband. So it's me, my husband, Darren, our daughter, Gracie, our dog, our cat. At the same time, my sister-in-law was moving from Phoenix back to Springfield and needed a place to stay. So you had a ton, way too many people, just way too many people in this little townhouse. Now, it's a townhouse where you have the front door here and really not that far. You've got like the kitchen. So it's a typical Sunday. Everybody's out doing their church thing. You know, Trisha goes to a Baptist church. She's church shopping. We go to the cathedral. We were kind of church shopping, but we said, let's go to the cathedral till we figure out where we want to build our home or buy our home. So we're home before all they are because we're Catholic. And they're Baptist. Okay, so they had a much more longer commitment on Sunday than we did. Also, Trisha was going to go meet up with some friends afterwards. So there I am, minding my own business. My husband's watching golf in the other room right behind me in the living room, and Gracie's with him. And I'm fixing lunch for everybody, minding my own business, having a lovely little Sunday. And I hear this. What? I immediately panic. Nobody knocks on doors anymore except if they're weirdos or trying to sell me something. So I immediately duck under the counter, and I go into the room. Darren, somebody knocked on the door. Did you hear this? Somebody knocked on the door? And he gets up, and he's like, I have no idea how you do your job. I said, grace of God, prove the Holy Spirit exists, folks. Okay, so he comes out. He comes up to the door, opens it up. There's two women standing there. Oh, hi. And they go, oh, hello. Are you Trisha's husband? It's so nice to meet you. He's like, oh, no. I'm her brother. We all live together. Sounds weird. Makes sense. Longer story. So they go, oh, well, you know what? Trisha stopped by earlier today at service, and we just wanted to stop by and say hello. She filled out just a little welcome card to the area. So we wanted to come by and just welcome her and say, we're glad that you're here. We're glad that you stopped by. Darren's like, oh, yeah, okay. And he, like, closes the door on him. Very Baptist of him, like, you know, right? He's like the old Baptist, okay? So he's like, oh, yeah, I'll let her know. And they're like, here, take this. And he's like, okay. So he closes the door, comes back over, sets it on the counter, goes, Katie, the scary church ladies are gone. So I'm like, do you say church ladies? I'm a church lady. Who are the church ladies? This is unique. And in my head, my immediate reaction was, no way was it the cathedral. This is recorded. Don't let Bishop Papraki listen to this. No. But I was like, there is no way. Okay. So I'm like, what do you mean church ladies? And I walk over and he's like, here, have some. And he's digging into a cherry pie, as husbands do. No plate, barely a fork, right? And enjoying it. I'm looking at this card. It said, welcome. Here's who I am. And it had a picture next to her name. And then it had, like, a phone number there. And then it was the other lady with her picture and her name and a nice little handwritten note on the back. We can't wait to meet you. Call me, exclamation point. I'm like, eh. And so then, and then he's sitting there eating the cherry pie. And I notice something. And I said, huh, that's cute. Cherry pie was brought by Cherry Hill Baptist Church. Oh, that's sweet. So my immediate thought was, okay, Dominicans, they like beer. Can I bring a six-pack of beer? When I welcome people to the church, like, where are we going here? Do I just bring a basket of bread and wine? How do we do this? Is this a formation opportunity? I'm immediately thinking this. My husband goes, no. That's not the strategy. The strategy is next week I'm going. Next week you're going. Out of this house, we're getting six cherry pies out of this place. But my friends, my dear friends, my Christian brothers and sisters are amazing at this. Because for some reason, we've lost the desire to get to know each other. And I can't pinpoint when that happened. In the church, if we're being really honest, it could be the scandal. It could be that sometimes the priests started distancing themselves away from each other, and we follow our shepherds and did the same. It could be a lot of different reasons, but we don't desire to know someone anymore. And they do. And they showed that. You know who hears this story and it's a gut punch? The Catholic parishes in Springfield. So guess what? Cherry Hills Baptist does exist. Actually, funny story. It's not Cherry Hills Baptist anymore. There was like a big revolt, and now they're just Cherry Hills Church. I found the whole scoop for my sister-in-law. It's a lot of tea. I'll spill it later if you're interested. But you think we got problems. Whoa, okay? So, but I'm like, look, guys, these people, they're your neighbors. They are just like us. Y'all work for the state government together. Right? Like, you all raised your kids together. What made them so bold and courageous to come knock on a door? And we are incapable of doing it. I have told this story. I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of parishes over the last 15 years, from consulting to the Arch of Chicago to Diocese of Springfield, all around. I have yet to meet a parish who started a cherry pie campaign. Yet. I have said that story almost probably 1,000 times. And we have yet to find a parish that has done it. So my challenge to all of you, do it. Call me. I'll like send you wine and bread or something fun. Who knows? Okay, I don't know. I was feeling like I miss my husband, so I just put the 12 angry thing on there. Also, he also says that I would be the worst jury person in the world because I'm a person that's like, yeah, I know, I do see that. That's a really good point, Beth. That's awesome. I mean, he could be innocent. Oh, Gary's right, too. I mean, he could totally be guilty. He did it, didn't he? Right? He's like, I would never want you on a jury, ever. So nudge theory is very interesting. There's a lot of key concepts about nudge theory. It's also behavioral science. We're going to go through some of these default options, framing, social proof, and testimonial. That should be fairly obvious where I'm going with that one. But let's dive into some of these. Whoops, wrong way. Defaults and simplified signups. I was floored when I saw this as part of nudge theory, but I've been talking about this for a really long time. So people are more likely to stick with a default option. A default option, so making it easier to join a group or volunteer by minimizing barriers is key. Nudge theory suggests simplifying the decision-making process will lead to higher participation. Let's keep playing in that world of Cherry Hills Church, okay? Do you know what they do in their membership process? Not only do they teach you over 3 Sundays through membership class, when you register as a member at Cherry Hills Church, you are automatically assigned a small group. And just let us know if that time doesn't work out to you. We're automatically assigned to the small group. Now, I'm not suggesting that you all start a 3-Sunday approach with Father on becoming a new parishioner at your parish, but we have a really bad time doing welcome ministry well. Like a really hard time doing it. In fact, if most millennial families are dual income households, and most of them are, that means mom and dad are out every single day in the workforce, and I am told by your parish secretary to come by the office between the hours of 8 and 3 p.m. to fill out a paper form. Oh, and bring your checkbook because you'll get envelopes that day. I get a little sick, right? I'm like, ooh, you know. Number one, I don't have a checkbook. I haven't had a checkbook in years, Number two, paper scares me. Recently got carpal tunnel. Don't like filling out forms on paper. Number three, I work. I'm just desiring to be a parishioner. I'm an anomaly. I'm a millennial trying to register at a parish. There's not many of us. Why are we making it so hard? Okay, so make it much easier. Now, I hear when people say, oh, well, we don't want to put up that form on our website for them to fill it out because we'll never meet them or see them. And I'm like, Church Lady Sally, you're not doing it anyway. Half the time the office is closed and half the time you're busy doing other things and you throw the form at the parishioner. Oh, yep, I'll send your envelopes. Uh-huh, envelopes, good, okay. That's way worse than I'm going online filling out a form that automatically syncs with the welcome ministry and now they're notified to then connect with me, right? Like there's a way better process to do this. And there would be a much higher participation rate and engagement rate if we really considered making it super easy. So other things on here, suggestions and applications, make small group or volunteer sign up forms highly accessible. Yes, that means they're also mobile. If you have a website that is not web responsive, you're doing it wrong. And I am going to be harsh on you when I say that. It is too easy to go find a responsive website right now. Okay? And too cheap. If you need help, call me. But it's very easy to do. Everybody needs to do it. So those things need to be easy for the parent at the soccer field who gets prompted by a push text on their phone. Hey, don't forget to sign up for our new small group miniseries that's happening in Advent. It's just 4 weeks, not 6. I'm sure you've got time for it. Okay? And then they can just click that link and get it done on the soccer field. That's how easy it has to be. There's also a possibility if I'm filling out a new parishioner form and I say, yes, I have children of a young age, or maybe she indicates I'm expecting a child or something like that, there's no reason you can't automatically enroll them for PSR if you don't have a school. Why not? You know their kids should be in PSR. Say, look, we've already registered you for PSR. Maybe you don't have a Catholic school. And to do that, we're going to have the director of PSR now reach out to you. That's Parish School of Religion or Religious Education. It's called something different everywhere you go. But that prompts them to then reach out to that new family and sit down and welcome them. Get to know the kids before they show up on the first day of class. Get to know the parents. Level set the expectations for the parents, right? There's a lot of automation that you can work that makes the ministry job easier, but also makes it super easy on them and have that level of higher participation. Another concept in nudge theory is framing volunteerism as normative behavior. This is creating a new normal for us. We have spent many years, I am a broken record when I say, when we say, who can I pray for this week, how can I serve this week, and how can I give generously this week, that is as normal as stewardship can get. We are not asking for them to launch to the moon. Okay, that is as normal as it can get. How do I know this? Well, funny story, when I started for the church, my dad, who's fire and brimstone Catholic, I thought he'd be really excited. It was like 2007, 2008. I had recently graduated. Remember, I was supposed to go to the White House, but I didn't get into a certain law school. He knows this story, so I was mad and stubborn. I was like, I'm not going to be an attorney then, you know? So then I was like, ooh, I got to get a job. So through a couple different chance encounters, I ended up getting a position at a very large parish on the west side of Chicago. And I was the assistant director of stewardship. And by this time, I was also enrolled in graduate school at DePaul. So I'm like, wow, Dad is going to be so excited. So he comes up and visits me for Chicago periodically with Mom, which was always great because I'd get the steak dinner. Because when you work at a church and you're like 23, you're like, ooh, we're going to Dunkin' Donuts, fancy. You know, it's like, woo. So Mom and Dad come up, we're sitting down for dinner. He's like, hey, how's the job search going? I was like, oh, Dad, you're going to be so proud. And he's like, I'm already proud of you. What's going on? Well, I got a job at a church. His immediate look. I was like, no, it's like a real job. And he's like, are there health benefits? I was like, yes, there's health insurance, Dad. Yeah, the dads in the room are like, we asked that, right? Do you have health insurance, Katie? Right? Do you get a salary? And I was like, yeah, it's a job. And he's like, what are you doing there? I said, well, I'm the associate director of stewardship. Oh, he says, a Protestant church. That's weird. Right? It's not normal, but guess what? My dad, who probably never claimed himself to be a stewardship person, was absolutely a steward for the 70 years. He died when he was 62. The 62 years that he was on this earth. He was absolutely a steward. He prayed during Mass, outside of Mass. He was a lector. He was a part of this Boy Scouts, huge, big Boy Scout. He volunteered his time on the Finance Council, on the Parish Council. Mom was on the school board. He helped form us and my family in the faith. While he didn't say stewardship, he absolutely was a steward, okay? Many of you in the room where we still think stewardship evangelization is a buzzword, guess what, folks? Y'all have been living it. You have been living it all the years of your life, but you just haven't been able to express it and share it with others, okay? So stewardship is that word to say, this is how I am working on sainthood. This is how I'm working to become a saint. This is how my journey of discipleship looks. How about you? Will you engage with me in prayer ministries? Will you engage with me in serving as a teacher for catechetical, you know, our catechetical program, whatever it might be? So a lot of this is doing what you're currently doing. The other indication in here is really important. We operate our language in scarcity. We need more volunteers for the parish festival or you're not having one, right? Okay, no one ever puts that line in, but I'm like waiting for somebody to do it. Okay. We are grateful that so many parishioners have already signed up to help with the festival. There are still a few spaces available. And if you'd like to join your fellow parishioners in making this event a success, please do so. You felt differently when both of those were read. Okay, there is a thing, it's called marketing. And language in marketing is important. So yes, you probably all have people that are leading a parish festival or a parish picnic. So it's not untrue. We have very generous stewards of their time and their talents toward the festival every year. We can't wait to welcome new leaders. If you say welcome new leaders, every millennial is like, oh, I'm a leader. Right? We like love being leaders. Okay. So like we will do it. If you're like, no, I really need your leadership, Bob. And he's like, well, yeah, I did update my LinkedIn profile recently. Real proud of that. Inheriting my dad's finance company. It's real great. Real busy. Right? So. Like, we millennials, we love it, okay? So, You say leadership, we say yes. Social proof and testimonials. How many of you do testimonials regularly in your bulletin or at, oh, I thought there'd be a little more of you. Okay. How often do you do your testimonials? But you're suggesting it's more than once a year during your season of stewardship. Is that what I'm hearing?
Maybe they don't have a season of
stewardship. Yeah, because it's all the time. Yeah, I like that too. Okay, so he's absolutely right. In order to be an evangelizer, we have to be willing to evangelize ourselves first, but then we actually have to do the hard part of sharing our why. Now, if I took a survey of a group of Catholics in a room, like here, just got this idea. How many of you ever written down your why? Like actually written down why you're Catholic? Show of hands, even higher. I'll be vulnerable with you. I have not. I would like to do this exercise. We go home, we pray, we do a holy hour, and afterwards you ask, why am I Catholic? We have to be able to answer that, right? It is not, hopefully, the answer is not, well, my mom and dad were. And then grandma was. I kind of had to, right? Like, well, it came with like all the sacraments. So now I'm like on paper a Catholic, right? Like there's lots of ways to answer that, but that's probably not the way that's written on our hearts and that God's calling us to answer that question. As parish leaders, we need to know our why, right? So testimonials are not just searching for the people not in this room. You're all parish leaders. You should be the first to raise your hand when it's time to give a parish testimonial at your home parish. So start with your why. Do your why today. So then when they ask, hey, this crazy church lady talked about doing testimonials throughout the year and not just on Giving Sunday or Stewardship Sunday or whatever we call it, that it's something we would do throughout the year. There's lots of different ways to do it, that you would be one of the people that raises your hand. Okay? So social proof and testimonials. I will say the actual theory here. So people are heavily influenced by what others around them are doing. This is especially true in trusted communities. Like a parish, where members look to peers for cues on what's expected or accepted. Okay, so if you think about like any social media platform right now, the selling industry is crazy. Why? Not because that person came up with a really clever product, but because some person goes, wow, look how awesome this vacuum is. Do you see how amazing this vacuum is that I am selling? That's not even a vacuum that I own. Well, it's a vacuum I own, but like I'm not the company person. I'm just selling it. Does anyone remember infomercials? Right? They were effective because they were testimonials, right? There's an infomercial about the big blankie that's like this big covering blanket, and it's like, do you ever sit on the couch and it's just the blanket never gets where it's supposed to get, right? And you're moving on the couch and the blanket falls off. And I remember in this infomercial, the lady was just sitting there on the couch and then somehow you could see her arm. She was just like this and she was like, oh, you know, and it's like the blanket fell off. And then they're like, no, you have this like blanket snuggie wrap. And then she puts this like ginormous thing over her body and she's like, ha, you know, they're just so funny. They're overly exaggerated, but I would more prefer hearing an overly exaggerated stewardship talk, right, than not hear one at all, right? Okay, so let's get into scientific experiments. How do we actually test things on our observed things that we're observing in our parishes? So this has been a really big question. A lot of my parishes going through parish vitality reports are studying. Well, Katie, we can't do experiments because our biggest experiment right now is that we have a 5-year pastoral plan we're doing. Okay, Father, how long is it taking you to write that pastoral plan? We're at year 4. Okie dokie. That seems like a lot of time and investment, and it's also, we're not really great at longitudinal studies in the Catholic Church. I don't know if you've noticed that. There's a whole bunch of pastoral plans sitting on shelves and getting really dusty because, I don't know, people's lives change. They move. The Catholic Church is transient. There are some parish members that are there for their whole life, 70 years. If you live in an urban city, that there's a very high likelihood that you have a turnaround rate of about 5 to 7 years in your parish because those young adults eventually move on. Okay? What would be much more of a strategic plan for you is really narrowing the focus. What can we play around with in 30 days, in 90 days, in 6 months? There's this concept in the church that we feel, well, we don't feel, we will all hopefully enter into eternity one day, But while we're here on the earth, you don't need to sign up as an usher for eternity. Okay? Like, it's okay for you to switch ministries. Okay? And it's also okay that if you have a ministry at your parish and it is not feeding your people anymore, it is okay to sunset ministries. I am giving you permission. You can use me as a blame. Right? Church Lady Katie said, you know, we're down to just four people on this. Maybe we need to let it go for a couple years and see if it gets renewed, if there's renewal efforts or an interest in parishioners to do it. So not everything has to last into eternity. And if you have a much shorter focus of, well, let's just try this to reach young families, it might be really helpful. Let me give you an example. Oh, I am doing good on time. I'm sorry. I'm a very quick talker. So, but I want plenty of time for some idea sharing and questions too. Okay, so conducting an experiment, everybody, put on your fourth grade science hats. This is just how you conduct an experiment. Yes, I know scientists in the room, this is very rudimentary, but again, we're not scientists. So, but it starts kind of with a question. How can we increase participation among young families? Hang in there and follow with me. My hypothesis is that young families who are known in the community, accompanied, and cared for well, tend to have higher engagement rate in parish life. Okay. My prediction is, by meeting young families at what I call a point of entry into the church, specifically I'm going to focus on baptism as my point of entry, and accompanying them throughout the process, we will see an increase in young families' connectedness and engagement with the parish. So now, over the next 6 months, I'm going to conduct my experiment. Now, I kind of pick on baptism because, again, we don't do a really great job with it. I have personal stories I have heard from millennial parents and even some, like, older Gen Z parents who said it was problematic. The forms were either lost or they weren't completed correctly. I didn't know what I was doing with the forms. I didn't really feel welcomed in the process. And the most important one was I didn't even know if we were really confirmed. I filled out a piece of paper and was told, well, there's your date. You're good. And nothing else happened. Right? So this is a very simple experiment. What I would like to do is I'm going to, in the final week of preparations before that family baptizes their child on Sunday, I'm going to send out final preparation notes, things you should be aware of. Yes, Mom, don't be nervous. You're going to get the candle. You're going to get the stuff from us. Remember, millennial parents were poorly catechized. Okay, so they don't know about candles. Remember that, like, they're really panicking right now. Like, they're like, where's the Catholic store? I got to, like, figure out what I need, right? So, and then confirmation. This is your date. Also, you might want to mention the confirmation. It's my parish does them after Mass. So deacon or father will meet you right in the sanctuary out of Mass. Sanctuary is another word for here, right? Like providing the details you can. Then what we're going to do is we're going to set up an experiment also of we're going to write a thank you note to them and an offering of prayer for their child. It was so great to see you at your baptism. If it's from Father, you could say it was such an honor to be able to welcome your child into our church. Any way that I can help your family, I would. And then invite them to an upcoming Mass with another family or a welcome ministry person. So that could be your welcome ministry saying, look, I'm not just meeting new parishioners. I just want to connect with families that come in through that point of entry, which is baptism. And they would invite them to Mass. And then perhaps you consider purchasing some things from Catholic Family Crate for your nursing room. No, it's not a cry room. For your nursing room or sensory room or anything else you want to call it. Just don't call it a cry room. Okay? Catholic Family Crate, putting things in there or maybe even sending something out to them. So I'm making some very actionable steps as part of my experiment. And there are things that we're currently not doing at my parish. I let it run for 6 months because I want enough of a test sample, right? So if you're a big parish, you could probably run this in 90 days or less. If you're baptizing 20 babies a month, right? Like, you're going to get a lot of information. So you just need to make it appropriate to the amount of people that you have. But then we're going to ask the questions. Whatever working group we have on parish staff or volunteers, what did we observe? right? Do we know them better? Do our welcome ministry people know them better? Do we continue to see them at Mass more than we did others? If you want to get really scientific, you would do an A-B split test. If you have a lot of babies getting baptized in the month, you might do this experiment with 10 of them and nothing with the other 10. Well, what you normally do with the other 10. Bow, bow. Okay. I've been even, every year the presentation gets spicier and spicier. So who, buckle up for next year, folks. But what did you observe between those two sample groups? Okay. Now again, this doesn't have to go in eternity, right? Like give yourself 90 days, give yourself 6 months, but allows you to be hyper focused on trying something new. We in the Catholic Church have been really comfortable in our lazy boy chairs. And I'll tell you, now that I'm approaching 40 in 2 weeks, I'm not as elegant getting out of said comfy lazy boy chair anymore. Okay? I've now reached the age that everybody goes, I'm not sitting in that lazy boy chair. I know what you mean now. I prefer that. I get it. Okay? I was always like, I'm just sitting in the comfy chair. She's like, not comfy. Nope. And I was like, oh, I see. You know, like getting out of it. So when we're super maintenance mode and we're super comfortable in the Catholic Church, it's gonna look ugly getting out of the lazy boy. It's going to look a little messy, but we have got to get a little gritty in order to do the good work of the church. And these are really great ways, small micro examples of how to just work through a process of testing. Everyone's going to look at it a little bit differently, but hopefully it's really bite-sized to you. So, oh, so good on time right now. Okay. I get really excited about that because Debbie knows she can talk. Okay. So Debbie's like, whoa, boy. So recent parish vitality experience we've done in our diocese. Now, granted, these are diocesan-wide, and so our scale is a little bit larger than the parish. But I just want to tell you how we've embraced some change management. So we're currently in a centennial campaign right now. We recognize post-COVID the diocese, quote-unquote, or curia offices didn't really need a lot of help. We had some deferred maintenance projects to do, but boy, did our parishes. We gave parishes 4 key areas of focus. Discipleship, stewardship, and evangelization. An investment of time and treasure as part of your campaign to build it up. Like, not a plan, an actual investment in it. So if your parish isn't doing that, maybe you need to hire parish-focused missionaries to come in and partner with you for 3 years as part of your campaign. Mother of Perpetual Help in our diocese in Maryville is doing just that. A portion of their campaign is partnering for 3 years to hire in the parish-focused missionaries. Okay? Second part of the campaign is pretty obvious. It's campus ministry, but it's a step further than just your deferred maintenance. We're asking you to use your campus as an evangelization tool. Do you have a merry garden outside? Do you have signs on your fences? Do you have the ability for in every one of your meeting groups that you have sacred art? There's a study that I read that sacred art evangelizes atheists more than even Catholics. Okay? Let your meeting spaces be authentically Catholic, interiorly and exteriorly. So they have to answer that. And then the last one is make sure that you're not in debt. And that was the third one. And then the last one is to make sure that you have a plan for financial stability in the future through endowments in our Catholic Foundation. 90% of the funds raised is staying at the parish. Remember how I said I like tithing? It's just a tithe. So you're contributing a tithe to the 3 buildings of the diocese that we need, but 90%, up to 1.5 times your annual offertory, stays at the parish, and then you tithe off that 1.5 times. If you decide to raise more in your campaign, 100% stays at your parish. Why? I have told numerous capital campaign firms that have run out the door when I said this. They're like, you're doing what? Like, it's a 60-40 split, or it's a 30. No. Because discipleship happens at the parishes. There's nothing I can do as Church Lady Katie and my nice, beautiful little, well, we really don't have nice offices, I take that back. But in our humble abode, in Parish Vitality office, where I can accompany you, I can cheerlead you, I can tell you, work with PushPay, they're awesome. I can like give you all cool new features and gadgets, I can talk to you about this, but I can't be there with you in mission every single day of the week. So I need you to do it. I need you to think of making that investment. So how do we do this? Well, we tell the parishes you have to complete what's called a parish vitality study. And this has been hard because they submit it and then our office reviews through data, census data. We review the Association of Religious Data Archives. Looks at adherence studies, how many people in your area are of a particular denomination. We look at annual parish statistical reports. We look at the mass count, and we use ChatGPT for lineal progression models. So I can plug into ChatGPT. I know, it's really hard to say. Anybody else know what I'm talking about? It's AI. It's the scary thing. And he's a better term than ChatGPT, right? Like, it's really hard to say for me. But I plug in, since 2018, what your mass counts were. And I say, project for me where they're going to be by 2029. In 30 seconds, I have the data. It's not hard to do. If you know how to use Google, you will know how to get the questions to those answers in AI. It's very helpful for this process. Now, what's been very scary for our parishes during it is when I pull up census data, how many of you ever looked at the census data in your parish? Some? So there's like parish statistical annual statistical report, but then there's also just the census data. You can grab census data from census.gov. I prefer a thing called Census Reporter. It includes really nice graphics. I was visiting a parish in St. Jacob, really small town, but it's outside kind of Metro East St. Louis. So that Metro East area is some of our diocese. And I'm giving there, we go, and then we report to your parish vitality study. It's required when we do the report that there's representation from your parish council, your finance council, the parish staff, and the pastor are there. Why? No offense to the pastors, but if I... in the report, they're going to have a hard time articulating it in most cases. So I want to make sure everybody is there to hear the parish vitality report. So I'm in St. Jacob, small town, and I'm showing them the census data. And in the census data, I'm going to show it to you because I have some internet, so I'll show you what I see. I can actually see a breakdown of ages in the area. And I say, your age of your census data should reflect and parallel the age breakdown in your pews. Well, St. Jacob's average age in the town is 31.8. And so, of course, somebody in the crowd was like, there is no way we average 31.8 in the pews. We're like at 65, okay? There's no way that happens. Oh, good. We are wrapping it up. Okay. So what's interesting about this is it doesn't parallel in most cases. If you actually look at the age breakdown in your census data compared to what you see in your pews, we are missing a lot of generational points. But that's a working group that you can create to think of how do we bring in those audiences. What's interesting is they said, I can't believe it's 31.8. I said, well, let's look further at this. When we looked at their population data from 2020's population data to 2024, and I asked them, I go, have you guys had any growing pains in your town? And there is this guy, there's always one guy. And I know he's on finance council and he's sitting there like, And I'm like, what are you noticing, sir? Oh, it's just way more traffic in town. And I was like, you know why? Because your population has increased 40%. They have a mentality at a certain age of remembering what their small town was in 1990. If you're an urban small town, you probably need to look at your census data because you've been in a place of growth. You've been in a place where there's lots of new families. And why is this important? Because it's so exhausting to hear, well, we just don't have any young people. That's not what the census says. come on, guys, that's not what it says. So then the next question has to be, well, why haven't you reached out to them? That's why these parish vitality studies are so hard. We're asking hard questions of you. But we're asking those hard questions saying, yes, but it's worthy of having the conversation. There's a lot of solutions to get to those answers. But the problem is, if we're not even asking the questions, if we're not even gathering our councils and talking about it, then we're never going to even have a chance to reach out to those people because we're just not talking about it. I'm not suggesting that there is one answer that's right. There is not. Every one of your parishes and dioceses is different. But we at least have to attempt the conversation. So when you take and you really want to deep dive into, are we meeting the needs as a church? In the larger community, not just in our mass count community we see on Sundays. Take a look into data, like Census Reporter, like census.gov, like ARTA, really interesting stuff. And there are links I will send you if you're curious about what Parish Vitality Study looks like. I'm happy to send you that, and you can use it. Copy, paste. Okay, software. Push, pay, Parish Stack, where you at? Yeah, don't be people excited about it. You know? Okay, so 2 years ago, we had a really crazy idea. I even had software companies that said, we don't like that idea. We're not doing that, right? And we said 2 years ago, we want data, our data in our diocese, to model a university system. So data goes up, down, left, right, left. It makes a cross. I was like, ha ha. Okay, so the reason we want to do that is because my personal data is like in 5 different databases right now. And that's throughout the diocese. But it's not only just in 5 different databases at the parish. It's in somebody's Excel doc, an AXA database for the school, a school database that they use for grading, hot lunch program and tuition program database. They have OSV for envelopes, which I love their database, but it's another. They have FlockNote for connectivity. I think there is a random MailChimp instance, but maybe they don't use that anymore. But right, like I'm sitting with the parish secretary being like, y'all, we have like 8 different systems. That is redundancy. That is the potential for getting errors in preferred communication channels. So Parish Stack Push Pay was the lucky winners to take us on, and they're like, oh, it's been hard. But... But they agreed with that vision, and they would agree with you. So I do encourage you to take another look at your data, how you're using data regularly. You should be pulling it. And I know a lot of you are thinking, I do not have time as a parish staff member to be pulling data. Great. Ask your stewardship council to do it. Give your stewardship council to do. I have been to so many parishes that say, I have no idea what my stewardship council should do. They should be in relational mode. And part of that relational mode is that they know their people. Your stewardship ministry should be active in your database. If they are not, how do they know who to talk to? They don't know your people. Like, they need access to the database so they can start creating relationships and stewarding those relationships and prayer, service, and giving. The last thing on some tech tools, I know this is going to make everybody panic, but I talked about the AI for the 2029 projections. I also use ChatGPT when I have writer's block. I'm just going to be honest. I was asked to write a thank you letter for, we have the music ministry program at Cathedral like every year. And the director of music said, I've solicited a couple gifts. Can you help me with a letter? And I was just having immense writing block. I also looked at my previous thank you notes and they weren't that great. Okay. So they were not that excellent. It's like, oh man, I just need some fresh ideas. So I took the prompt, I described what I was looking for in ChatGPT, and it produced a letter. I read it, I edited it, I added our own scripture and our own references to it. But that saved me a lot of time and a lot of heartache to just be able to put in a descriptive prompt and get it done. I heard back from the music ministry director, and he was like, Katie, that was the best thank you note I've ever received. And I was like, huh, thank you. Father, I will come to confession later. But I thought, I was like, I don't know, I feel a little icky doing this. I don't know. And you will. Like, it does, automation is scary. I do get it. And the Catholic Church has got to be courageous and bold to engage in the conversation of ethics when we start going down the AI and automation trail. I was listening to somebody the other day on a podcast, and they had said, it's under 5 years when all of you will have robots in your homes. That's weird. Because in the 90s, I saw a lot of robots taking over the world, okay? Like, this is not going to look good, friends. How many of you already have a robot in your house? It's the vacuum! My kids named our vacuum, right? Like, okay? But there's an ethical problem there. At the core of everything we've discussed today, it's relationship. And our relationship, our desire to know another person, is based on Jesus' own desire to know us. He knows us, and he desires us to know him. A robot will never be able to do that. They do not have that same thing that God has given to us and who we are. So we have got to get more courageous in these conversations on how do we build relationships? How do we evangelize? At the core of Parish Vitality is all of that. It's being evangelized ourselves, so we're willing to go evangelize someone else. Okay, so at the end of all this, you'll see the slide deck. You'll see that there's a Calendly link. I bring up my one of my favorite documents ever, Evangelii Nuntiandi. Read it if you haven't. It's beautiful. It will charge you on evangelization. I highly recommend it. But remember, we have to be evangelized ourselves to evangelize others. My information is on here. I'm going to open to Q&A and comments. I'd love you to share if things have worked for you and give some examples. I have on the slide deck this link. I'd love to chat with you and pick your brain. So you just go to that link. It'll be a Friday. You just pick a time slot. And let's chat. We can chat over phone, Zoom, whatever you. It's getting to be that time. But let me know. And then as Debbie Benz, raise your hand. She's in the back. She is my stewardship cheerleader. Debbie Benz is a great use of resources as well. Everything we produce in our diocese, we are willing to share. We will send you the Canva link. You can adapt it. You can share it. Anything you want, take it. You don't even need to ask for permission. Just take it. Okay? Questions, comments, ideas that have worked for you?
Yes. This is when I get my steps in.
This is just a comment. Instead of the word volunteer, we always use steward in our parish. We don't use volunteers at all.
And did you know that's part of the normative theory? Yes. Yeah, now today you'd be like, see, it's science.
First, I want to say this has been excellent. I feel like they should put you at the beginning as a keynote and not as a bonus at the end. So I have two questions. One is just maybe curiosity. At your diocese where you're giving 90% of the campaign back to your parishes, do you also have a parish assessment that they're required? Oh, my gosh. Okay, so I'm going to hide my name tag and not say what diocese I'm from. But it... What advice would you to give overcome challenges where your diocese is requiring you to use a certain database that isn't maybe as robust as PushPay that we just got, so they're not going to change it again, or we're being required to use a specific company for social media, even if we maybe have a really robust social media program on our own, we're being required to use it. A bishop maybe who's very averse to technology because he's scared of it. So we have lots of limitations. So, and we're, I think, very vibrant. We have a Newman Center. We have a school, but we're being required to use these things that give us limitations. So what advice would you give to those of us that maybe don't have the support of someone like you?
So I know there's lots of church mon in the room too, but I really am passionate about church ladies, and the vast, like 90% of our churches are run by women outside of the pastor. We have women secretaries, women business managers, women DREs. Like, we have got to just be a place of networking amongst ourselves, and church days are hard. They're hard. You're seeing how the sausage is made, folks, and sometimes it's ugly. And so please, I would first encourage you, like my link is there. Like, we will learn from each other. And some days, like, I have people that I've met at this conference that are like, I just need a Church Lady Katie hour, right? We do a little power hour. We rally each other up. We cheer each other on. We affirm each other, and we go. Now, how do we get around your diocese?
So, Katie, I'm being told that we're
out of time.
We are. The next session is at 9:45. We don't have a half an hour in between, and so they need to set up for their presentation.